Welcome to Central Asia Metals interim results presentation. Many of you will know me of old, and I suppose this is probably one of a good set of results. We're very pleased, and I'm absolutely over the moon with the results that we're getting. We've announced this morning a 5.5p dividend, which is a 1p more than last year, in spite of a challenging copper market where we've seen the price of copper realized drop $1,000 per ton compared to the first half of last year. But we've seen production for the first half of the year up 27% to just below 7,000 tons for the first 6 months of this year. So our gross revenue, we have production is up, but the price realized for our product is down quite considerably by $1,000. Our gross revenue remains pretty flat for the period. However, we've taken great strides on our cash costs, both operationally, but I have to say cash costs we announced this morning on a C1 basis of about 40 cents per pound is really getting ridiculously low for the industry, and on our presentation, which you'll be able to see a cash cost curve later on, which shows us very much at the bottom decile of the cash cost curve. There's a story behind that which Nigel will take you through, but a lot of that reduction from the first half of last year, 67 to 40 cents, has been down to a devaluation of the Kazakh tenge against the dollar. But nonetheless, with that cash cost, our group EBITDA has increased slightly from 16 to 17.4 million. And actually, our profit before tax has gone up nearly 50% to nearly $15 million, our PBT, at a PBT level. So our earnings are up, our EBITDA is up slightly, our profit before tax, and of course, importantly, our cash at the end of the first half of the year was just over $30 million, slightly down from where it was at December close, but bear in mind that we had paid out over $12.5 million in our final year dividend for 2015 in June, just ahead of the close-off date for the cash position. And also we've had the capital program, which we've been running in Kazakhstan on our phase two expansion. So all of that has been paid for. We still have cash in the bank. We have no debt. And our project, which we've been working on now for some year or more to allow us access to the Western dumps, is well on track for completion in Q4 of this year. And interestingly, we told the market about $19.5 million would be our capital program, capital cost to get there. We're now looking at being something like 25% or thereabouts under budget. And in terms of expansion, our Copper Bay project in Chile is very much on track for completion of the DFS towards the end of the year. So I just want to highlight the numbers. Dividend is up on last year and represents about 26% of our revenue for the first half of this year. Production was up 27% on the first period of last year. That translates to about $1,500 tons more in the first half of this year. And of course, our EBITDA is over 17 million. So you will have seen this graph before, and I'm now on page 4 for those on the telephone. And looking at the share price performance graphs, the left-hand graph shows our share price performance against the copper price. And you can see since we started operations back in 2012, we were receiving nearly $8,000 per ton of copper in the early days when we started production. And we've seen a steady decline to where we now sit at about 4,600. But in the corresponding period since we started, late 2010-12, you can see the share price of the company has risen from IPO days about just under a pound, 96p, to where we currently sit about £1.76-1.78. And you can see on the right-hand graph, our share price against the AIM All Share Basic Resources Index. And again, I've used over a number of years. If you had bought a share in us, you could at least afford a Starbucks coffee. Whereas had you bought a share in the AIM Basic Resources, you wouldn't even be able to afford to go into a Starbucks. And interesting, the total shareholder return, that's add up all the dividends that have been paid, which amount to
just over
50p, plus the appreciation in the share price in that period, has given a total shareholder return in 6 years of 137%. And these are numbers, I think, which you cannot ignore. And this gives us a good, solid market capitalization, just under £200 million, cash of £30 million, was set fair for going forward. Now, that I've stolen all Nigel's thunder. So Nigel's now going to take you through the rest of the numbers, both financial and operational, and then I'll come back towards the end.
Yeah, as Nick says, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, first of all. Nick's given the main headline numbers, but let me just add a little bit of colour to the financial numbers, first of all. Our gross revenues, as Nick says, stable period on period, really, just over $30 million. That's against a declining copper price, which we've experienced, of about 17%. So first half of 2015, we were achieving prices close to $6,000 per tonne, whereas in this recent half-year period, we've achieved prices closer to $5,000 per tonne. $5,000 per tonne, and 4903 as you see there. In fact, with a hedging policy in place, which really is a little bit opportunistic in many ways, what we managed to do in the first half of the year was just take advantage of a few spikes in the price in mid-March and late April, and managed to lock in some prices for future quarter deliveries, which enabled our price to be 4903 in the half, as opposed to the average, if you look at it over the LME over that period, it's about $4,700 per tonne. So slight advantage taken of our hedging policy, which we now have in place. In terms of the actual profitability of the company, based on that, we have got a reduced cost base, which I'll come on to talk about more in a minute. But regardless of whichever line you take, be it the EBITDA line, an increase of 9%, profit before tax is up close to 50%. And then if you look at earnings per share, it's up by almost 95% on a per share basis. That profitability driven by a stable revenue and a reduced cost base. And there's a common theme running through the financial numbers as to why we have a reduced cost base. Obviously, we'd like to claim there's management efficiencies, there's increased volumes. The devaluation has had a significant impact on our results in this half-year period. We've seen last August, when the tenge devalued from approximately 186 tenge to the dollar to about 346 tenge to the dollar, over a fairly quick period of time, we're in this particular period, reporting period, experiencing the benefit of that devaluation. And what we haven't really seen, which we expected more of, was inflation to kick in the first half. We've seen minimal inflation on the things that we spend money on: electricity, reagents, coal on site. Payroll, I'll come on to separately, because we control the amount that we pay our employees, obviously. But overall in the country, it's double-digit inflation, yet you've got a massive decrease in the actual value of the tenge against the dollar in which we sell our copper at. And the final thing to say on the tenge, we have seen it in the first half of this year stabilise. It stayed between about 340, 350. We don't, at one stage last year, people were talking about it going to possibly 400 tenge to the dollar. We haven't witnessed that, and I think with the strengthening of oil price a little bit, and also the Russian economy in terms of the linkage to the ruble, we've seen that stabilise, so we would expect that to continue for the second half of the year. So a little bit more on the costs, and I think we've given quite a lot of transparency on what our cost base is effectively as a group. This is the fully inclusive cost, which you can see has almost halved over the period. We last first 6 months of 2015 were reporting $1.87 fully inclusive cost, and I think that's a good measure for us because we only effectively have one revenue generating project. So 1.87 has come down to 97 cents, a 48% reduction. If you look across the line, and I'll talk more about the C1 cash cost in particular on the next slide, but even MET linked to the copper price, obviously that's reduced because the copper price has reduced. Depreciation, there's a one-off impact there in many ways, which will go on throughout the reporting period. We took the opportunity, because we've expanded out to the west and we now got the licenses to access the resource in the west, to extend the life of mine of the assets that we employ within the business. Effectively, that's extending it by another 10 years. As a consequence, the annual charge for depreciation and amortization has come down significantly, something like about $3.9 million benefit in this particular period compared to the first half of 2015. Last year, remember, right at the end of June 2015, we had an incident on site. We took a knock on, effectively a write-off of some reagents on site. That had an impact on the period, and if you look in the full year period, it's 2 cents per pound. But in the half year, that was about 6 cents per pound, and obviously we haven't had any incidents in this first half of the year. And then corporate overhead is very much similar in absolute numbers. We haven't reduced the number of people that we run, you know, we employ to manage the business from a commercial sense, but with the volumes increasing, the unit cost has decreased quite significantly, down by 30%. So all in all, good numbers, reduction from 187 down to 97 cents on a fully inclusive basis. If we now just look at, you know, something which we manage within the industry quite closely, which is how much does it cost to produce your copper effectively and then distribute it out to your customers, you'll see that first half of 2015, we were looking at 67 cents per pound of copper produced on a C1 basis. And that's on the new measure that we incorporated into the full year results for 2015, whereby we exclude all the taxes now, but we include the local G&A costs. That has now come down by 40% to 40 cents per pound. Across the patch, it's come down in most areas, actually. Not only have we benefited from the devaluation, and we've had things like electricity costs has come down by 50%. So whereas we paid 7.9 cents per kilowatt hour last year, we're paying about 4.1 cents per kilowatt hour. Sulfuric acid down from $90 per tonne down to about $49 per tonne. So right across the cost of the, if you like, the ingredients that we put into the mix to produce our cathode copper. Ferrol's an interesting one. Despite the 25% increase from the 1st of January this year that we gave our staff, you see, we've still got a 47% reduction in our payroll. So employing not, you know, increased numbers of staff with increased production, it's a similar number of staff, so you get the volume benefits. And even with the pay rise we gave them, we're finding that we're getting a significant unit cost advantage. And then DNS, that stands for distribution and supply of the copper. So the cost is basically taken from the factory gate out to our customers, which still remain in Turkey at the moment. We renegotiated our offtake deal with a company called Traxys over a three-year period. It now takes us out to the 31st of December 2018. And we managed to benefit from a 30% reduction in the cost of shipping that copper from site to the end consumer. And that's come through the results in the first half of the year, which is obviously beneficial. And then local G&A, again, the volume impact, increased volumes, lower unit costs. So a significant reduction in our C1 cash costs. And what it does do is it leaves us, as Nick's already mentioned, right in the lowest quartile of the cost curve, which is just where you want to be in the current climate, whereby there's a bit of an unknown as to where copper price is going, there's a slight oversupply in the market, and nobody really knows when demand will kick in and there'll be a deficit, albeit that most people, you know, indicating that, that should happen in the next 2 or 3 years. But right now, that's where you want to be on the cost curve. Just on to the next slide. And for those on the telephone, I'm now on slide 9. This slide shows effectively in the first half of the year our cash flow, where the money's been generated and effectively where we've spent it. The chart on the right-hand side shows the cash flow since IPO, so almost 6 years ago, where we've generated the cash, how much we've generated, and again, where we've spent it. Very similar themes coming out here. Strong operations, strong cash flow, and where's that money gone? Most of it is going towards paying local taxes, paying back money to shareholders, and developing the project. And I think the key thing from this is that in the first half of the year, we started off with $42 million of cash. Okay, we've ended up with a slightly lower balance at the end of the period. But in that period, we paid $12.5 million back to shareholders, which was the final dividend for 2015. We've spent $10.4 million on developing the plant. And I'll come to that more in terms of stage two expansion. And over the 6 years since we IPO'd almost, we've paid back $73.8 million in dividends to shareholders. Again, $70 million we spent on developing Kounrad. The initial capex that we spent on developing the 10,000 ton per annum plant, and then the subsequent capex on expanding the capacity to 15,000 tons, and now stage two, where what we're effectively doing is extending the life of that plant by another 10 to 15 years beyond 2030. And the key point from this is that going beyond this, what you will see is far lower elements of capex coming out, which means there will be more available cash to grow the business and return to shareholders as the board sees fit. Next slide, please, Nick. I won't dwell on this particular slide. It's a similar kind of theme, to be honest with you. Just to point out, the tax we paid locally, $74.3 million in mineral extraction tax, local payroll taxes, corporate income tax, etc. We are a good corporate citizen in Kazakhstan. We pay our taxes, and we pay locally to support the community. Next one, please, Nick. Balance sheet, again, I won't labour the point, but ever since we started, when we IPO'd almost 6 years ago, we've had a pretty strong balance sheet because we took no debt on at the time. It was all equity funded. And as we go through the years, even though we've had a reduction in our asset base, again, because of the devaluation being kicking through the numbers, we have strong cash, we have no debt. Actually, we have minimal working capital balances. We don't have big demands on working capital, small levels of inventory. We get paid for the copper as and when we deliver it, so there's no long-term debtors on the business. The one issue we have had a problem with over the years, and most of you in this room will remember that, is recovery in VAT. And we've had a minor success over the past 6 months on that front. Thanks to my management team, Alex and Leanne, who are in the room here, pushing forward on actually being quite aggressive to make sure that we recover that VAT from the government, because it's money that's due. Although, you know, hand on heart, we probably didn't expect to get as much back as we actually have got back from the government. We've actually recovered $3.6 million of that VAT balance, $1.7 million in February in the reporting period, and then another $1.9 million in August, which was outside the reporting period, it's a post-balance sheet event. But it's a number, you know, we can be proud of actually, to actually recover that cash. For those on the telephone, I'm now on slide 12. Returns to shareholders, again, Nick's mentioned the returns to shareholders in terms of traditional measures, total shareholder return. I think in future maybe we'll move over to a return on capital employed or return on equity. We have banged the drum quite a long time now on this particular measure, which is we raised $60 million, we've now given back $82 million of that cash, so we've covered our funds that we raised 6 years ago and more. And as you can see from the table on the left, we had the buyback, and then since then we've been paying back healthy dividends. Just to reiterate our policy, it is a minimum of 20% of the gross revenue. Historically, though, we've paid back closer to 30% of that gross revenue. And this particular dividend that was announced this morning of 5.5 pence is approximately 25% on last year's interim dividend, which was 4.5 pence, and it also represents 26% of our gross revenue for this particular reporting period. So healthy dividends remain, and in future, we'll start moving over to returns on capital employed, returns on equity. But even when you look at those, we're around about 30% return on capital employed average since we started production. Our peers are probably about half of that, if not less than that. So in that measure, that's a strong performance as well. Okay, operations review. Ever since we IPO'd, and historically, our colleague Howard Nicholson would have been stood up here giving the operations update. Howard actually retired from the board in June of this year at the AGM purely for personal reasons, and I want to assure everybody in the room and on the telephone that Howard remains fully committed to this business. It's Howard who's delivered on a lot of this operational performance. Howard still manages it, and in terms of the financial numbers I've given you, none of those would be possible without a strong operational performance. I think the one difference between the operational performance and the financial performance is a common theme coming through the financial numbers. Some of the things which are outside the control of management effectively. Copper price, we can't do a lot about. We can tinker at the edges on hedging. But also the currency movements, we can't do a lot about that, and we've benefited significantly from that. However, on the operational side, it's almost virtually at our control. A lot of that is down to the very good management of Howard and the team that he has developed on site to deliver these strong operational results. What this slide shows, as Nick's already mentioned, is we produced 6,908 tonnes of copper in the first half of the year, which is 27% increase, half on half. That is the benefit of the expanded plant coming through, obviously, from last year when we finished the construction works on site in about May of 2015. At the end of this year, at the end of this period, should I say, first half of 2016, we'd exceeded 47,000 tonnes of copper produced, and also our sales increased over the period, as you'd expect, because we normally sell the copper we produce in the month. I think what we're confident as a board to state here, we're keeping the same guidance, 13,000 to 14,000 tonnes of copper, but we're confident, given where we are in the year at the moment, that we will come in at the upper end of that range, given what production is, and what we're announcing today, and what we know internally amongst the management team. Our stage 2 expansion, that remains on track, and as you'd expect, maybe with Howard, it's probably going to come in under budget. 25% under budget is what we're announcing today, given the numbers that we have on hand today. just to reiterate, the expansion, and I'll talk about it more in a minute, will be completed within this year. Leaching will only commence, though, on site in the Western Dubs, Q2 2017, once the winter break, which is similar to what we did when we did the start-up of the initial plant. As an overview of the operations here, what this slide tells us is how robust the performance is. We've had no LTIs in the period. In fact, we now exceed 1 million man-hours on site without an LTI. The plant availability remains extremely high. If you look down here, at 98%, and it's been consistently high since we started production. And also the quality of the copper, that is extremely high as well. Almost 5 nines copper, 99.998 copper, which meets all the requirements of our offtake partner. On the leaching side of the business, what you will notice there is that we irrigate a huge area. We're now 31 hectares, which is over 300,000 square metres, about 50 football pitches of area. I spent all last week sussing that. About 50 football pitches of area that we are constantly leaching on site. So it's a huge operation in terms of leaching operations, number of irrigation pipes. And that will only get bigger as we move to the west. We'll have to move the solution 24 kilometres backwards and forward. Still leaching a large area, higher dumps. So on site from a leaching operation point of view, this is a big operation. And the 31.32 hectares, on a day-to-day basis, what the guys are managing is the mixture of grade and flow. Nicola talked several times about this. You play one off against the other, such that we get the plating capacity of 45 to 50 tonnes of copper per day. Can't easily control the grade, but we can switch new blocks on and we can play with it on a day-to-day basis. But what the expanded plant now has got the ability to do is to deliver different flow rates through the plant. So we've averaged, as you can see there in the first half, we've averaged in this period 844, which is more than any other period you can see on there. But it has got the ability to go up to about 1,100 cubic metres per hour. And that's if the grade comes down, we put more solution through the plant to get the amount of copper cathode we want out. If the grade's high, and we do experience at times higher grades than this, when we switch new blocks on, for example, you can reduce the flow going through the plant to get the actual copper cathode. Next slide, please. Okay, the resources that we're managing in order to deliver on this copper outcome. This is just an aerial view, or a plan diagram, should I say, of the eastern dumps. Many of you will have seen this before. And just working our way around, and for those of you on the telephone, I'm on slide 16 now. What we've done is we effectively started off on the nearest dumps, close to where the facility is at the moment, which is dumps 9 to 10. And you'll see that we've exhausted, in terms of what we plan to extract from those dumps, most of the copper. So there's only a minimal amount of copper left, and we've got our expected recovery of 51%. And we've worked our way around. We then went to dump 6, dump 7. We're now operating primarily on dump 5. And we've extracted about 9,500 tonnes of copper from dump 5, but we still have, per our estimates, and this is on a reduced recovery basis of about 45%, another 17,800. As Nick would often say, we're not cutting cheese, so I'm not going to give you an exact number because it's not an exact science. But we say have 18,000 tonnes of copper to recover from dump 5 before we start operating on dump 2, which will be starting next year at some stage. And again, 45% recovery expecting there. So in theory, we have 32,500 tonnes of copper to extract from the eastern dumps. And at current production rates that we're looking for this year, that would be about 2 to 3 years life. The intention is certainly not to exhaust the east and then start the west. It will be a transitional phase over between the eastern dumps moving into the western dumps. And also, we may come back and do intermediate leaching on the eastern dumps and recover slightly more than 32,500 tonnes of copper. The infrastructure's all in place. We don't remove the piping, so we can still go back there and leach those areas should we choose to do so. So that's where we are on the eastern. As we move to the western dumps now, again, for those on the telephone, slide 17, the whole expansion, the whole objective of our stage 2 expansion, which is costing, we announced $19.5 million, but we'll come in at about 75% of that, is to get access effectively to 175,000 tonnes of recoverable copper. This diagram here shows where the SXEW plant is and where the eastern dumps are, and what we're building effectively is a 24-kilometre, or 12-kilometre pipeline, should I say, one way, 12-kilometre pipeline the other way for the PLS, into the western dumps. And we'll access these. From next year, we'll start leaching in those areas, let's say from Q2 2017, but we may only do several thousand tonnes, so we'll be leaching both the eastern dumps and the western dumps next year on a planned basis. Slowly but surely, more dependency on the western dumps as the eastern dumps become exhausted. As I said, phased increase. The majority of the annual copper production we're expecting will come from the western dumps from about 2019. Slight technical problem. I appear to have missed off one slide, so if you don't mind, I will.
Hang on. Come on.
Where do we have to meet?
There we go.
No, we can't. For those of you on the telephone, we just experienced a slight technical difficulty. There's a slide on your pack, if you've got one, slide 18. Really, all this does is show you whereabouts we are on the expansion programme. And, you know, in a nutshell, we're 95% complete. We're going to come in under budget. What have we done? We've finished off the electricity power line. We've constructed the pump and boiler houses. They're almost complete now. What will happen is that we will go into commissioning of those, that boiler house and the pumps, and the pipeline pressure tested in later this month and into October. We expect to have all that completed by the end of October. We've actually, it's quite a good picture on the slides if you can see it. What we've laid is 3,000 concrete supports like railway sleepers that the PLS line and the raffinate line sit on. You can see it just on the slide there. There's 3,000 of those been laid, and then 24 kilometres of pipe has actually been laid onto it and welded into position. And as I say, that'll be commissioned later this month into October, probably more in October if I'm honest with you. We've built the boiler house. We've got three 2.8 megawatt boiler units in there, similar units to what we've got on the eastern side in the initial boiler house that we built. And also the collector trenches, they've all been dug, they've yet to be lined. That'll be completed in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So work's well progressing very well. We're very confident we'll finish that before the winter sets in. And have it ready for leaching next year, and also have it commissioned so it can then sit dormant for 5 months before we put it into operation next spring. The only other thing we've done, which we decided as a management decision, was to access more water really for the plant, which was the water pipeline we've built from Lake Balkash to the plant effectively, about 17 kilometres of pipeline, two pump houses to effectively pump water from the lake to the plant for additional water should the water that we currently access from the disused mine shaft run out in the next 3 to 4 years. So it just gives a little bit more contingency. Last but certainly by no means least, we put a great priority on our social responsibility and corporate activities in the area, and obviously our environmental responsibility. And to that effect, I've already mentioned, you know, our good health and safety record. Yes, we've had a few incidents, but we do take this very seriously, and we now have over 1 million man hours in LTIs. We have government health and safety inspections regularly. We come out very good in those inspections. We also have environmental inspections regularly by the local authorities. And again, we come out positively in those environmental checks. We've got a pretty thorough environmental program underway in terms of the western dumps to see what the geophysics are and what the subsurface hydrogeology is in that area, because it is different to the east. We know that. We've employed SRK to do some work in that area as well, and we've already in the process of drilling monitoring boreholes for when we start there, so we can monitor the actual subsurface water effectively. And then socially, we've always been strong in this area. We have a strong focus on our training of staff, as you noticed by the 25% pay increase to our staff. That shows how we value them in the area, and they are, you know, I think we're deemed as a very good employer in the Balkash area, which is a pretty run-down area. We put money into local community projects as we see fit, and since we started we've put in over $1 million now. And our focus on that front remains very much on, you know, health, education and any charitable organisations. We tend to do as much as we can through our own staff as opposed to giving them some money to spend as they see fit, which is probably not the appropriate way of doing it. So I think we're well respected in the area and we take those responsibilities extremely seriously. And on that note, I'll hand back to Nick to talk about the potential growth.
Thanks, Nigel. I think you'll agree, look, the financial numbers are only one part of the business. The main part is an operational plant that gives you production consistently at the cost levels that you will have seen. Those who followed us over the years, you'll see that we've been consistent in terms of production. Period on period, we've increased output, and that's been allied with a lot of operational success. I think we're coming to the end of the sort of expansion of operational output. We're now going to go into a sustained period where we're going to see production very much on the same level as this year going forward. And so we shouldn't be looking for marked stepped increases, but what we will be seeing is more efficiency coming through in operations. You've seen it already coming through in the first half of this year. So our cash cost of production at 40 cents per pound is, don't go expecting any great drop in those numbers. That's going to be a very stable number going forward, as is production. So from here on in, our capital program is pretty much complete with the completion of stage two. So that's going to free up a lot of cash for the business next year, because we will not be having that capital program going forward. I think the first half of this year, our capital expenditure was close to $10 million or thereabouts. Second half, it's going to be significantly less as we complete. And going into next year, we have no major capital programs. So that's going to free up a nice awful lot of cash for us to do things with. And so, you know, having said that, and I don't want to necessarily lead on to say that Copper Bay is necessarily something we'll spend our money on, but it does free up money to enable us to follow other opportunities. Copper Bay, we've been trading now for 18 months or thereabouts. You'll be aware that we completed a PFS last year, and those gave us numbers that indicated there was definitely a project there. And just for those who are not aware, Copper Bay, the opportunity is tailings on a beach from some old state mines about 60, 70 kilometers inland from the coast here at Chanarral. And so we've got something of the order of 50 million tons of material grading 0.24% copper sitting on a beach. We've drilled it. We're now into the DFS, and that will be completed in the next month or two. And as part of that, we've done more estimation work, how much is there. We've done much more detailed assessment of how we will extract the sand from the beach using dredges. We've looked at optimizing the process route to produce both a copper in concentrate and a copper in metal. So we'll be benefiting from both operations, so we can recover that acid-soluble copper into a copper plate and the sulfides into a concentrate. But we're looking at overall recovery, still pretty much the same as where we were before, about 73% overall copper recovery. But it is very much dependent on the copper price and the price you use going forward. It's all looking very positive currently. Whether or not we go ahead and use our money that I said is available next year, that's something we will be looking at as we go forward, as will options to finance that. But leading on to business development, and many in the room will know Gavin. Gavin, for our heads up, the sort of business development arm of the business, joined the board in at the last AGM in the beginning of June as Howard stepped off. Then Gavin joined us, and rather than just get him up and ask him to present one slide, one of the problems with business development, we can never tell you what we're doing. However, it's sufficient to say that we are actively looking at, and have been for quite a number of years, looking at other opportunities, but they have to meet our certain parameters. And one being, I think the most important thing, it has to make money. People sometimes forget the mining projects or mining companies have to make money. That's what we're in the business of doing. And we show that we do that, and we return money to shareholders, which I think, given the history of our dividend payments, I don't think there are many on the AIM market that have been as consistent with their return of money to shareholders. But with that proviso, we have looked at probably over 100 projects internationally. nothing as yet has fallen in our lap or deemed to be sufficiently interesting for us to move forward, but we get closer. Now and again, we get closer to opportunities that may come our way. So I would say to people, those on the line and in the room, if there are any opportunities that people could see that maybe we could help other management teams or other projects get off the ground, then do please come and talk to us. But we will only move when the parameters that we set ourselves about making money, being profitable, are met. And so that is the end of the presentation. It's really quite short, sweet, but I shall leave you with this and the important numbers. We maintain an EBITDA margin currently in the first half of this year of 56%, but I think since operations started, it's been closer to 52-53%. Our cash cost is coming down and has period on period come down to its current 40 cents level. We've got a strong balance sheet. We've got no debt. We will maintain our dividend because I think that's been the single most important means of showing the consistency and the strength of our business. But at the same time, out of cash, we've funded all the capital programs, so we have entirely built the project out of equity. And as Nigel says, the return on equity and the return on capital employed from the business is industry leading. There's a slide in the presentation pack in the appendix that you'll be able to see, which gives you an idea. What page is it on, Nigel?
On page 28.
On page 28, you'll see some simple numbers there that show us our relative performance against some of the others in the sector. With that, and only $2 million or thereabouts of sustaining capex next year, the business is really now set up. Operationally, by the end of the year, it will have the wherewithal to extract copper from this whole of its asset base. It's got a plant that is as efficient as you can possibly get. You know, we are set fair operationally at Balkhash Kounrad going forward. Now we just have to find other things, and we are looking, that will take us to the next level. And with that, thank you, and ask for any questions from the room or on the telephone. Shall we take questions from the room first?
Yeah.
Any questions? Tim, yeah.
Just a couple of financial questions, if you don't mind. Firstly, on the hedging, you mentioned that you put some hedging in place in March, and it was really well done. But I was wondering if you could give some color around that, like how far out you've done the hedges for, whether those volumes are second half weighted versus first half weighted, and also I imagine there could be a potential price to what you achieve.
Okay, yeah.
That was the first one. Second one, intangibles. You had almost $1 million of intangible investment in the first half. I imagine that was mostly the exploration and evaluation that comes May. I'm just curious whether it can continue at the same rate in the second half before falling off. And then the last one was just on working cap. You mentioned VAT receivables, 1.9 that's coming, 7.7 was down in August.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of curious as to working cap, a couple months in already in the second half. Do you expect some more stability on inventories and payables? And that impact, is that just sort of coming through?
Three questions there, Tim, I think. Hedging, first of all, a bit more colour onto the hedging. We have a policy. We agonised over a policy. And because we have no debt and we have a very low cost base, as you've seen there, we really can do without a hedging policy. We don't need one to sleep at night. So it is, as I said, very opportunistic. And what we tended to do, through Alex, who runs our treasury side, is just keep a close eye on the day-to-day copper price movements and what the analysts are saying longer term. And in all honesty, all we really did was look at it, and it spiked above $5,000 per ton. We had a budget of $5,000 per ton, and we had a discussion with Nick. We have the authority, as a management team, the board has delegated this authority to us, that we can hedge up to 30% of our rolling 12 months production. So we still leave 70% exposed to spot, which I think a lot of investors want. That's why they invest in us. 30% is just a kind of opportunistic, if the price is good, go for it. Now, it's a loser's game, is this. You can win, you can lose, And when we first set that hedge, I think Alex had backed me up on this, the price went above the price we fixed it at. So I'm looking a bit sick and I'm, looking for my P45. Then it went down, and so you're the hero all of a sudden. So we really just said, it's over 5,000, that's our budget, let's lock it in. And in terms of how far out do we go, we tended just to do it the next quarter. So we had another look in April, and we, you know, I suppose it's we're only reporting the first half results, so I can't really say what we've got in place, but we certainly know that hedges out to 2017. You know, it's pretty short-term stuff that we do. And you know, it's managed to have a bit of favourable benefit to the business, but it can go the other way, so I'm not a big fan of, you know, constantly doing it, trying to buck the market, because ultimately I'm going to get burnt if I do that. That's the answer to the hedging question. Intangibles, yeah, it's Copper Bay, really, and it's going to be a similar kind of amount. We set aside, we invested $6 million to get the 75%. We think we'll have some money left in the balance when we come and have a look at a decision, are we going to invest or are we not going to invest? And then we'll have to take a decision, what do we do with the minority shareholders and how do we then invest and get a bigger stake if we are going to invest? And that's a discussion we have to have as part of the DFS discussions, I think it's fair to say, you know, and moving Copper Bay forward. But in terms of $1 million in the first half, it will be something similar. Best person to answer the question is sat next to you, Leanne, but I think it's something similar, isn't it, Leanne, in terms of... And then your last question was VAT, which, you know, we put up there in glowing lights, obviously, because it's a funny thing, VAT. I mean, we've been owed that money for a long, long time now. And actually, of the balance that's still owed, which is still about $1.9 million, some of it is still pretty old balances, you know. We're still struggling to get some of that back. If it's pre-construction or if it's deemed as pre-export, they have some funny rules in Kazakhstan. But it's, you know, it's a success that came from working with PwC and actually working with the American Chamber of Commerce and actually getting up into... you know, ministerial government house up in Astana, meeting the Prime Minister, stating our case, and I think they recognise that this is the kind of business Kazakhstan needs, really. It's normally big state enterprise in Kazakhstan, pretty inefficient to organisations, and because I think we're seen as a bit of a, you know, a positive business in Kazakhstan, I think they were keen to actually, you know, give us something back on the VAT, and we made a strong case for it. But it's taken us 2 years to get to this point, and we're still owed a bit of money. Working capital, that has been pretty steady since we started production. We have very low inventories, like $3 to $4 million worth of reagents and stocks, and the copper, once it's produced in the month, is generally shipped out, so there's no outstanding debtor balances. And in terms of trade creditors, well, there's a bit of a culture in Kazakhstan whereby, which is not something me and Leanne are that keen on as a financial controller, they will pay suppliers sometimes up front, maybe 50%, 40%, depending on what you can negotiate, and you know. It's a cultural thing. They like to be paid up front for things. So we don't have large outstanding payables either, to be honest with you, in many instances. So it's pretty small beer, really, as business. And I hope that answers your question. Okay.
Martin.
Just a small one. The insurance business,
Yeah.
Can you negotiations... ongoing regarding the quantum, what sort of numbers are you talking about and
sort of when? We estimated the damage to be around close to $5 million, but obviously, you know, insurers being what insurers are, we're not going to get anywhere near that number. That's kind of your optimum number that you want. We're at the moment haggling with them, and this has gone on for 15 months. It's been rather a frustrating negotiation because we have effectively a lead insurer who's Russian-based. And so he's playing some games with us. But we're looking, the loss adjusters have recommended something around the magnitude of about $2 million should be repaid back. So it's just now getting the reinsurers over the line. That's after deductibles and, you know, all the business interruption deductibles you get. So we're looking at that kind of level. But I certainly cannot sit here and say we'll get that, because there's some members of that syndicate there, the reinsurers, are saying none of it's valid in terms of what's happened. Some are saying, yeah, we think it is, it's fair to pay it back. So there's a bit of a debate going on. In fact, there was a meeting in Almaty on it, and Marsh Insurers went out on our behalf, and I haven't had the feedback yet from that. It was pretty early Monday morning, but hopefully I'll get that this week, and we'll continue to pursue it.
Okay, so it's going to come quite soon.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit binary as well. I think it's black and white. You know, if we get anything, I think it's close to the number I just quoted there, maybe $1.5 to $2 million, but then we may get nothing at all, you know, and we'll have to deal with that. Well spotted.
How sensitive is the plant to great variations of the PLS? And will there be any impact of the move from the western dumps to the eastern dumps when the difference in mineralogy, or will there be an effect when you change over?
There will, but it is within the capacity and the flexibility of the plant to manage those things. I mean, currently, you'll see from the table on the technical slide, you'll see the consistency in the grade. But the grade...
Slide 15.
Slide 15, yeah. You'll see the grade year by year is stabilized this year at about 2.3% for the 2.3 grams per liter. But the plant could treat down to 1.4, 1.5 grams per liter. And we look to balance the grade coming in against the PLS flow rate. So as Nigel said, to keep the amount of copper going into the plating section at between 45 and 50 tons. And I know this is getting a bit technical, but that is the sort of optimum range that we want to put into the EW section. So the grade drops, we increase the flow rate to compensate. Now, when we go to the western dumps, we do expect a slightly lower grade coming in on a long-run basis. On a short-term basis, it will be up and down as we start. But we intend to use the eastern dumps as an intermediate leach solution system, whereby we put raffinate over and through the eastern dumps. It picks up some copper tenor, maybe 0.5 to 1 gram of copper tenor in the east before we pump it to the west. So we preload it. And it's a well-known system in the leaching process, an ILS system it would be called. But that's how we, at the moment, intend to do it. But I think we've learned an awful lot since we started back in 2010. We probably know more than most people about in-situ or dump leach operations. You have to be a bit flexible, but you know there are solutions are always out there. Alex. As you, many of you will be aware, all our operational staff out in Kazakhstan are Kazakh nationals. We've operated the plant absolutely like that since day one. And operationally, in country, they're probably the best team you could hope to get. The people we brought in initially to help commission the plant were to commission the SXEW plant. As you know, Western Dumps is really just an infrastructure expansion to the west, which is allows for the generation of PLS, not operation of the plant, which we're perfectly comfortable with. We look at the availabilities. We're getting 98-99% availabilities, which shows A, the plant was pretty good when we built it, but also operationally the people are up to the mark.
I think in the early days, Alex, the team didn't have the experience. It was mainly Howard. Now Howard has trained that team. They've got 3 or 4 years' experience in the plant, so they're pretty good. And we do use some consultants. We use a chap called Phil Crane. We've got Ang Mo, who used to work for us as a consultant now. So we've got access to these consultants as when we need.
I
think the team have got the experience now to deliver on it.
Richard.
Good question. I don't see us relaxing it. I think it's a good prudent discipline, to be honest with you. But you're right, there should be a bit more fat there to effectively cover. But it's only an internal guideline. We've never been, you know, hamstrung by it effectively. We've always delivered on that. I think even, you know, this one obviously is covered 3 times by cash cover. I don't see us, we've not discussed it as a board that we'd relax it. I think it just gives us, you know, more flexibility in some ways.
So if we, sorry.
Just one more. Remind us again on the western dumps what your metallurgical recovery.
Well, we're planning anywhere between 35 to 42%. You'll see on those numbers I've given there, it's an average of about 39.5%, something like that, really. That's the kind of number we're looking at. But you know, all the testing we've done has shown that the acid soluble copper in the west is fairly similar to the east, really. So.
I mean, metallurgically, well, from the mineralogical aspect, there's slightly more sulfides over there, but a lot of it is broken down. What we do expect to see is a longer leach time compared to what we've seen in the east. I think at the full year announcement we gave a bit more color around the operations, the sort of leach characteristics of the western, of the eastern dumps, where we said that the leach period that we had at, we started with the estimate of about 180 days would be the leach period on the east, we're actually seeing probably 210, 220 as being, you know, the operational outturn of those numbers. And on the west, we will see longer, more days again, out to possibly 300 days. But because the dumps are so much higher, there's so much more copper in any particular area, that compensation of a longer leach time is more than compensated by more copper being in any particular area. If there are no more questions in the room, is there anybody on the line who'd like to ask a question?
For ladies and gentlemen on the phones, please press star one if you'd like to ask a question. Our first question this morning comes from Mark Elliott from Investec. Mark, please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Quick question just on the cost profile. So great news you've rebased it. Well, I think, you know, it's come down a long way. With the lower grades and, shall we say, recovery on the eastern dumps, is there sort of, are effectively cash costs going to sort of climb back up again longer term that we need to sort of factor in? Or are they going to now set rebase lower? Also, you gave local employees quite a big wage increase. Do we need to sort of think that there may be another of a similar sort of scale type increase to come to catch up with any sort of local inflationary pressures?
In answer to that, Mark, and good morning to you, we have always, I think, stated that when we go over to the west, we may expect a slight increase in our C1 cash costs based on increased use of electricity. And at the time, we were only maybe looking at, say, 10% of the C1 cash cost as that was at the time, effectively. So that was maybe 7 cents per pound. Nothing has changed in that regard, but it may be less because of the devaluation. That we would expect to be lower because, as I said before, we're paying a lot less for our electricity, 4 cents per kilowatt hour at the moment, and the consumption's come down because of some electricity conductivity issues we had in the plant. So that I would expect to be less than that number, but I still think we will expect a slight increase when we move to the west next year. In terms of the rest of this year for our C1 cash costs, we may see inflation kick off a little bit more, but there's nothing specifically on the horizon that I'm looking at that says, yes, it will definitely increase, but we're just being prudent. But I wouldn't expect our C1 cash costs to increase significantly from what we've announced this morning, effectively. So that's on the C1 cash costs. And in terms of the impact that any lower grade or difference in volumes, I don't think that has a massive effect, really, because we play with those daily to get the actual copper that we need to harvest to get the output. So that won't really affect our C1 cash costs at all. And in terms of the pay rise, that was a very one-off exercise, given the very strong devaluation and the impact on people's back pockets in the country and us wanting to look after our employees. Should we come to wage negotiations in December, and we're looking at a 350 tenge to the dollar, it will be a standard inflationary pay rise that we'll be looking at with the general directors and nothing more. So that will just feed through to a normal cost increase year on year, not a 25% increase.
Okay, thanks.
Does that answer your question, Mark?
Yeah, no, just to clarify, no material impact post sort of 2019 sort of to cash costs.
What, on the western dump? Don't forget, we'll be leaching from the west next year, so there'll be an element of, you know, pumping costs that we incur next year, because we do plan to leach from the west next year, and that'll be a gradual transition to 2019, where primarily it's on the western dumps. But I don't personally expect it to be material. All the work we've done so far in terms of the increased costs that there may have been, we seem to have a good handle on and know what, you know, what costs are in the plant and what additional costs you get from pumping the solution longer distances.
Yeah, bear in mind that, you know, from a labour point of view, there's not a lot of extra, and a lot of the costs are unit of copper costs rather than anything else. And power is, as Nigel said, costing a little over 4 cents now. So, yes, when we ran the original numbers, we expected to see between 5 cents and 7 cents increase in cash cost, but we've had the devaluation since, and those numbers are probably close to four cents to 6 cents.
Thanks.
Increase, but only when Western dumps have really fully kicked in.
Great. Thank you.
We have no further questions on the phone lines.
Okay, lovely. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed on the phone. And in the room, thank you for your questions. Thank you for coming, and see you all again at the year-end results. Thank you.